Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday, the 28th of August. Very nice to have you with us. And let me introduce our panel to you and we'll get started. We welcome your letters as well. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. And you, we love to hear from you for the most part. And it'll be nice to have you weigh in on the topics of the day. Let me go to our panelists. We haven't seen Mike Spain in a while. He was vacationing. Okay, it was a week, still,
I was here 2 weeks ago.
It seems like forever. So, Mike Spain, the associate editor of the Times Union, is
right.
Back. Good morning, sir.
That
how
ain't
are
right.
you?
You took a vacation.
Well, you know, everyone's right. entitled to do it. All the people around me wanted to go, and what am I supposed to do?
That ain't right.
Yeah. But I went to North Carolina. We're going to talk about North Carolina.
Okay. We are going to talk about the old gerrymandering story there in North Carolina.
I drove through some of those gerrymandered counties. Congressional district.
Lovely state, isn't it?
Pick your own jerrys.
All right. J.P. Miller is here. He is the man behind the Empire Report, a wonderful news aggregator and website, and they put together all of the best, so you don't have to. And good morning, sir. How are
morning,
you?
Joe.
Nice
great
to have you. Alan Chartok is here, who made an appearance prior to the WAMC debate, the district attorney debate that is happening at 1 o'clock today on the Fitzpatrick main stage in Stockbridge. And Alan's going to moderate all of this along with Berkshire Bureau Chief Josh Landes, Ian Pickus, our news director, and Jen Smith, roundtable panelist, and, of course, wonderful reporter for the Berkshire Eagle. So,
all true.
All right. Good morning.
All true. Well, I'm a little worried, Joe. I'm a little worried that all those people who are not going to be able to get in to hear the Berkshire Ramblers because they waited too long to get their tickets, 413-528-1955, because they waited too long, and at the last minute they'll be calling me up and saying, I gave you $100 at the station, can't you get me in? And I'll say no, and they say, okay, we'll never give you another dime again as long as you live, and that's why I'm worried.
Two things that we should keep in mind. One, I failed to mention that the Berkshire Ramblers will be the opening act for the debate today, so that'll be good. They're going to be the opener.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, that'd be great.
An opener for the debate?
It's not even.
Have that.
It's not even close to being true.
Oh, okay.
I think you might get a different crowd.
That's true. But the thing I did want to mention is that it's Sunday at 7:30, right?
Yeah, Sunday at 7, not 7:30.
Sunday at 7.
That was a special concession to me because usually they do 8 o'clock, but they know what time I have to go to bed. So they made it a little earlier.
All right. It's at the Guthrie Center. It's 413-528-1955, as Alan mentioned, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But all of this, keep in mind that, time flies, and so do tickets, and so there you go.
And one other thing I just want to mention.
One other thing.
And on Thursday, I believe this Thursday, we'll be playing my interview with John Cohen at 1 o'clock. Now, John Cohen, does anybody in the room know who he is?
Not me.
Crickets.
Well, John Cohen was the founding member with Mike Seeger of the New Lost City Ramblers, the greatest old-time music group in history. And he'll be appearing in our area, and we got him to do an hour-long interview the other day talking all about Pete and Pack Times and how the New Lost City Ramblers got started. He's terrific.
That is on Thursday at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
Thursday at 1 o'clock. Today at 1 o'clock, it's the debate.
Yeah.
Thursday at 1 o'clock, it'll be that interview. I should mention, and just a quick for those of you, Libby is normally with us this morning. She called in sick about an hour or so ago. I don't know if you were listening yesterday. She was hacking up a lung, and it's only gotten worse. So she decided to
I like it, Joe, hacking up a lung.
Yeah, so she decided to spare us all and stay home today. And so we wish her well, and she'll be back with us next week. So
it's just as well anyway, because there's not much in the
news. No, there's
to
nothing
talk
to
about.
Talk talking about nothing that Libby would want to weigh in on. I'm sure she's screaming at the radio now. But
you didn't hear him. He said, "There's not much to be.
Not much to be discussed."
All right. Anyway. Well, let's get started.
I hope Libby feels better and We don't make her more ill when we talk.
That's right. Yeah, we don't want to exacerbate the problem. Okay, well, we talked about this yesterday and what 24 hours can do. After the president finally ordered the American flag to be flown at half staff this week in honor of Senator John McCain after intense criticism of his response to the Arizona Republican's death. The announcement came after the flag atop the White House was raised to full staff earlier in the day, less than 48 hours after McCain's family announced that the six-term senator had died at his home in Sedona, Arizona. Despite our differences on policy and politics, I respect Senator John McCain's service to our country and, in his honor, have signed a proclamation to fly the flag of the United States at half staff until the end, until the day of his interment. That was a statement that the president released late in the day yesterday. This was after he ignored almost a dozen shouted questions from reporters asking about his views about McCain, who was a persistent critic of the president. He blocked efforts over the weekend to release a statement honoring McCain. There was the H word in the statement, hero, that the president did not like. And so the president opted to just express his condolences to the family without offering any praise of any kind to the senator. Then all hell kind of broke loose. And who were the heroes in this? Well, ultimately, the American Legion, who wrote and said, look, we talk a lot about the president's base on this program. So a large part of the president's base wrote to the president and said, this is not right, and you should change your mind. It is the U.S. Code calls for flags to be lowered in the event of the death of a member of Congress and the day of the death and the following day, but presidents have the power to issue proclamations extending the period and have done so routinely. The statement also released on Monday said that Trump had requested, you will remember that Senator McCain and his wishes made it clear he did not wish the president to attend his funeral service, though the president has requested that Mike Pence speak at Capitol Hill services following honoring McCain on Friday. Chief of Staff John Kelly, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, and Ambassador John Bolton will represent his administration at services being held this week. And again, the eulogies being done by former presidents George W. Bush and Barack Obama.
You know, this is such an interesting thing because, first of all, McCain is a hero and really does deserve an awful lot of what he's getting. But one can only suspect that a good deal of the huge outpouring from McCain has something to do with the people who are not that happy about Donald Trump. You know that this is a way of sort of sticking it to him, and I think that's what's going on. But I've never seen anything like this in which, you know, CNN is putting up his picture, McCain's picture, and playing solemn music behind it
I saw it on a billboard on I-90 just driving
really?
In, yeah, where it just said
electronic billboard.
Yeah, electronic billboard. Really? It gave his date of birth and death, John McCain.
Exactly.
American hero, something like that. Yeah.
Exactly. So it is so fascinating, and it is all complicated, I think, by the question of who that governor over there is going to appoint to that, you know, to that seat. He's got a difficult choice. Does he want to keep the Republican steadfast, happy by appointing an arch conservative in the spirit of the group that has now taken over the Republican Party, or does he want to appoint somebody, even a placeholder like Cindy McCain or somebody like that, who would honor McCain and his legacy? I know what I would think he should do, which is the second thing. He should say, this is the way we honor this guy who brought so much to our politics, and he left behind a whole bunch of stuff. This wonderful credo that was read by his legislative assistant, who went on about how, you know, we have to learn to live with each other, and we shouldn't be building walls. He's left behind quite a thing. And the one thing that we keep hearing and learning is that there is no more old Republican Party. This is a new Republican Party. This is a conservative group of people. And whether or not in the end that helps that new party keep control is another whole story. I suspect it's not going to.
Well, the Arizona governor said he would wait, of course, till next week before he takes any action and let the tributes to John McCain kind of wind down. But it would be interesting if he did take the interim step of putting Cindy McCain, the widow of Senator McCain, in the position, because that election won't happen until November of 2020, I believe. The way the clock works, it has to be the appointee will be through that period.
And remember, Mikey, they've got another senatorial election going on at the same time.
And Jeff Flake is not seeking re-election. Right. There's a primary today to pick the candidates who will go for his seat. So a lot is going on in a state that's very complicated because it's along the border. It has some very conservative elements and some moderate elements. All eyes next week will be on Arizona. This week, they're all in Washington. And I agree. I think, Alan, you're right. There's a lot of people just using the president's ridiculous grumpiness to pile on him, and they're seizing this very easy opportunity to show how mean-spirited the president is, that even in death he can't recognize that John McCain is a hero. But to have the American Legion come out and call on the president to change his position, that is his base. I mean, those are the people that have supported him by and large. And that coming after the awful week he had last week, where we had conviction after conviction of people close to him. Have you seen any surveys, Joe? You're always right on top of those. I'm sure his numbers are not great right now.
No, and I can check on it. The one I was starting to think as you were talking, though, that I did hear a statistic yesterday that surprised me, that John McCain's popularity, his approval rating by Republicans was, I believe, in the 40s, where the president's is in the 80s. Mm. And I think so there was some thought that was what was driving. He thought he could,
leverage that.
I think veteran and hero sort of and death take over all of that. And the tables turn.
And let's remember he's saying that McCain isn't a hero because he got caught, which is unbelievable, while Trump didn't serve. Now, nobody wants to throw the first stone here, but on the other
hand— It's been thrown.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, this is the American Legion. What is the guy sitting in there, having a beer, saying about a president who is deprecating John McCain for what he didn't do and saying he's not a hero? And by the way, insisted, I think you just mentioned it, Joe, that the word hero be taken out of the of whatever he was putting out there. Extraordinary.
Yeah, this has certainly reinforced the caricature of Trump as being immature and childish, and he has taken, I would say, what some might call some parting shots at McCain. And McCain did, on his deathbed, take a couple parting shots at Trump, saying, "I don't want him to be at my funeral," etc. I actually thought that Trump's silence yesterday, when he was asked by reporters about McCain, was good for Trump in that he took the tact of, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say it at all, which is very rare for Trump. That's almost a huge tribute in itself.
That's every mother's advice to their children.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah, it was sickening to watch. I mean, it was because it's such an easy thing. The statement that they ended up with, I didn't agree with him on policy. However, I honor his service. I honor his family. I honor his service to this country as both a senator, a congressman, and as a soldier. Done.
move on.
Well,
yeah, I think that was what that attempted to do.
But it's still a cheap shot, right, Mikey? Saying, you know, I didn't agree with
him. Well, a lot of people didn't agree with him.
But that's not the time.
That's the way a lot of people say, you know, we didn't always agree, but John McCain was a man of valor. You know, he was a compromiser, you know. I mean, that was, I heard that from 100 people over the weekend, you know, on the news.
Well, I don't agree with Mike. I don't agree with JP here. I think he doesn't get credit for keeping his mouth
shut. I'm not giving him credit. What I'm saying is it could have been a lot worse if he opened his mouth.
Oh, you're absolutely right. No, I agree with
so
you.
I'm not giving him credit.
He showed unusual restraint.
Yes, right? Yes. I thought it was childish. I thought it was immature. I thought it was mean-spirited. But it could have been worse if he did talk about him, because he does not have anything nice to say about him. And McCain, on his deathbed, says, I don't want this guy going to my funeral. Have you ever heard of someone before saying, hey, I don't want I don't want my ex-wife going to my funeral.
In my family?
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. You know, don't invite Margaret.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's fairly common.
Okay, that's
I
fair.
I can think of a few that I might want to leave in my
right.
And I would say, too, that the media's focus on Trump has turned the death of this American hero into a referendum on Trump's reaction to the death of an American hero. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah. Right.
And I think that's unfortunate for McCain. And McCain is, look, his eulogies are being given by two people that he battled with and lost to. That shows what a hero and a comfortable guy he is in his own skin, that he's having two guys that defeated him give his eulogy.
And, by the way, who are only too happy to do it because their own feelings about the president.
Yes.
And I'm sure they both will be very powerful. I think they both will be very, very good, very good speeches. And you look at who McCain's friends were, Lindsey Graham. The Three Amigos. I'm trying to think of
Joe Lieberman?
Joe Lieberman, that's right.
He's supposed to speak at the service also. And Henry Kissinger is listed as one of the ones who is going to speak.
Because I think there's three separate events. There's the hill. Well, there's one in Arizona. There's one in Arizona, the capital of Arizona, and then he comes to Washington, and then there's one on the hill and the rotunda, and then
and that's where Pence, I think, is going to speak.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then the National Cathedral is the service, and then the
private service at Annapolis, right?
At Annapolis, where he'll be buried, with his best friend.
Does Sarah Palin get a speaking slot or no? Nowhere.
I didn't see that, but I did see that Renee Fleming is going to sing Danny Boy.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
You bring up a good point. We have to go to a break here, but did Sarah Palin tweet anything?
Yeah, there was some back and forth Saturday night. Yeah.
Okay.
Nice words, warm words.
I mean, he put her on the map. We would never know the name Sarah Palin were it not for John McCain.
I don't
McCain.
Think he thinks it was his most distinguished.
No, he certainly came out and said that we screwed that up.
Yeah, she was a wacko bird, I think.
Yeah. Well, let's argue with him there, right? Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. Alan Chartok is here, Mike Spain, JP Miller. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we'll be back after the short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel discussion. Alan Chartok is here, Mike Spain, JP Miller, Libby Post on the DL, but we have lots of letters, and we'll get to those right now.
She's on the DL. That's great. Okay.
Well, not really.
That's the disabled list, you know.
That's right.
I mean, your use of the term is what's
great. Oh, okay. I don't mean
that she...
It's great that she's sick.
No, and people are already calling in and writing and saying, you know...
Get better.
Gets better.
Yeah.
And Christine says, good morning, panel. Libby, feel better soon. See? I saw the billboard about John McCain. I wish some group would take action. And flashing the September 13th primary election and the fact that it is on a Thursday. Low primary turnout exacerbated by change from Tuesday, usual day we vote. And thanks from Christine.
That's a good point.
And another Christine writes, Filchers. The New Republican Party is not made up of conservatives. New Republicans are fiscally irresponsible, libertarian, chicken hawks, encouraging racism. And then in capital letters writes the word filchers. And then we heard from Richard, who said, President Trump's eloquent opponents. Donald Trump may or may not be a good president, but he was good. Uh-oh, I'm going to have trouble with this one because I never watched his program. Donald Trump may or may not be a good president, but he was good at cultivating hardworking, smart, and successful leaders on his show, The Apprentice. The show's alumni, including Kwame Jackson, Tara Dowdle, Randall Pinkett, and of course Omarosa, have been on cable news channels lately, providing their insight on Donald Trump. They are some of his most strident and eloquent opponents, and that's from Richard.
I guess if you're a big fan of the Apprentice, you'd be up to date on some of that.
I never saw the program. Never, ever.
I remember the name Kwame from the first season.
Yeah. I watched the first season, but after that it was, you know.
Yeah.
Remember Kwame Nkrumah?
Yeah, it's not the same Kwame as
that guy.
Right.
I know. Okay. Steve says, New Republican Party, conservative in name only. The New Republican, in quotes, New Republican Party is a fake conservative party. Conservatism used to be a form of worthy opposition and would keep the so-called liberals checked in balance. Now the Democratic Party is far more conservative than the increasingly corrupt Republican Party.
Well, there's some debate about whether the Republicans under Trump are conservative. I mean, they passed the biggest deficit, or at least they enacted a tax bill that would create the biggest deficit, which is ordinarily something conservatives don't like to do.
But you when you think of what we mean when we utter the word conservative, we're not thinking in terms of spends. We're thinking of, these are a bunch of reactionaries, and we call them conservatives, no?
Well, perhaps the right label may not be conservatives, because a lot of true conservatives are offended by being aligned with the people who've supported Trump. Perhaps you're the political scientist. What would you call them? Would you call it ultra right wing, maybe, or something like that?
Well, what I would call them would lose our license, so I'm not allowed to do that.
Well, in a political definition that you can say on the air.
Yeah, that's what I just was sort of trying to say, which is that we're calling them basically these people who want to build walls and send everybody back and anti-immigration.
There's elements of racism there.
Yeah, and a racist. We call those people, whatever you want to call them, we call them conservatives.
But I think that dishonors conservatives, people who are just reasonably conservative.
So here's an honest thing.
I agree with Mike, especially on the spending stuff. And we're talking about the New Republican Party versus the old Republican Party. And with regards to McCain, McCain was never a darling even of the old Republican Party. He was always a maverick. He would always be, he was always a bipartisan guy. And so, yes.
He's part of the Gang of Eight.
Yes.
Yeah, he was that. Yeah, for those people who were just being born since then, the Gang of Eight was a group. Go ahead, Mike.
A bipartisan group in the Senate that came up with a pretty good compromise on immigration, and it kind of got blown out of the water by the Tea Party.
And then some of his, he was in trouble right over a banking scandal.
Keating Five. He was one of the Keating Five. Yeah.
So you had the eight and the five. That's 13?
Yeah, right, 13. But, the Keating scandal, it was like a mortgage finance company scandal and banking scandal. It changed him. I mean, people can make mistakes and then strive to be better.
Absolutely, and some get away with it and some get away with it and some don't.
Yeah.
Some are forgiven and some are not.
Well, I think it was the New York Times obit where, although it may have been the Washington Post, and talking about that really was the impetus for McCain-Feingold. That experience was what got him working.
So he reached across the aisle with Russ Feingold and came up with tough laws.
Well, you may be right. That's what it was, what the motivation was. But a better way to put it might be he wanted to get out from under that.
Sure, but if you get out from under a mistake by changing something for the better, you got to honor that.
I have to honor no one.
I'm speaking rhetorically. I certainly would honor that.
Well, and major bipartisan legislation, which you can't say that about virtually any bill over the last 10 years.
No. Yeah, just minor little add-ons to bills that's about the only bipartisanship going on now. Someone sneaks something in a appropriations bill that
names a bridge, yeah.
Yeah, makes a bridge or something.
Rick in Conesville, where everybody eats ice cream, writes, that's my own thing. It would be fitting to name the next Navy aircraft carrier the USS John McCain because he was a Navy aviator.
Yeah, that would be nice. Could he still have the Russell Office Building renamed in his honor?
By the way, that politics is interesting in that there are Republicans who think they're being suckered on that one.
Yeah, and how can they disagree?
Well, it's Schumer that suggested it, yeah. not a Republican.
Because Schumer wants to get that racist Russell's name off of that building.
Right.
And ain't good for the Democrats, right, to have him there. So it shows that he's reaching out. And, of course, the troglodyte majority leader is saying nothing about it whatsoever.
So it probably won't happen.
That's the kiss of death, of course.
Right, until sometime in the future. Right. Which maybe, you know, there is a knee-jerk reaction to start naming things after people once they die, and then there's a little bit of remorse, you know, thinking, did we overdo it? A lot of things were named after John F. Kennedy in the weeks after he died, and then later on were changed back.
Cape Canaveral, stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, because people said, well, that was always a great historic name, and maybe that was overreacting, so they compromise and right. Think about it.
Okay, so one more, Joe. Philip writes, McCain, panel, McCain never saw a war he didn't like. He voted 99% of the time with the Republicans. Health care vote was 1%. Voted for the awful tax cut. Infected the world with Sarah Palin. So let's respect the man without overstating his so-called greatness.
Well, you know, that's been talked about. I think that all of this has come out over the weekend. I don't know if it was a lack of news or it was just a combination of this being a pretty significant story, but it was all McCain all the time on the Sunday talk shows. And a lot of that came out, that people disagree with John McCain, but they still like him. They still respect him. And he was the kind of guy you could make a deal with if you were a Democrat from across the aisle and you wanted to get something done that was right. And he was there to listen.
Do you think it's appropriate to judge a man by his friends? So, for example, Lindsey Graham. Let's take Lindsey Graham, who I don't like at all, and who, you know, came out and said, well, you know, if he wants to get his own attorney general and, you know, and Trump wants to name a new attorney general, he should be allowed to do that. You know, this is not exactly, you know, a friend to the working man.
Well, Lindsey Graham, I would say, I highly respect Lindsey Graham. He calls balls and strikes. He criticizes Trump as much as he backs Trump up over time. And what I thought the real power of McCain was that although he was typically voting with Republicans, he had that maverick in him and he was unpredictable. And so as soon as he gave his opinion on a piece of legislation, that was always big news. You know, you kind of know where Mitch McConnell's going to go on a piece of legislation. You know where Chuck Schumer's going to go on a piece of legislation. McCain was a swing vote. If he liked the Supreme Court nominee, that person was probably going to get through. If he didn't, that Supreme Court nominee was in big trouble.
Yeah, so I disagree with you on one thing vigorously. I don't like Lindsey Graham. When you say he calls balls and strikes, well, there are umpires who, you know, they've lost their vision years ago. So just because he calls balls and strikes doesn't mean he's right. He's certainly not right about firing Jeff Sessions, is he?
Well, did he say he should fire Jeff Sessions?
He said he should be. No, he came out gratuitously said he should be allowed to have his own attorney general.
Which is true.
Well, he does. He picked Jeff Sessions.
Yeah.
Well, that's that's
so
my
what's wrong with what he said? I mean,
because he's trying to obstruct justice. That's why.
Well, yeah, right. Doing that. People do dances.
It was a dance. I agree. That answer was a dance.
Yeah. But when you mentioned friends of people and all that kind of stuff, Gail Collins, the New York Times columnist, the great columnist for the New York Times, she had a column Sunday that noted that you know, Duncan Hunter, who was the congressman who's been indicted from California for using campaign funds for personal expenses and then blamed it on his wife.
Threw her under the bus.
Yeah, he really did. He was the second congressman to come out in favor of Donald Trump. The first one was our own Chris Collins from Western New York, who was recently indicted for insider trading. Yeah, and there's others, you know.
By Republican, by the way, by Republican.
Who has yet to blame prosecutors. His wife for that. Yeah.
So, depending on who your friends are, maybe you can be judged by your friends.
Yeah. Good point.
But good point. All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have other stories to get to. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and our panel discussion. Alan Chartok is here. Mike Spain, J.P. Miller. I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. So, let's talk NAFTA-ish. we apparently can't call it NAFTA, but we'll use it just as a
trade deal by any name.
That's
is a good
right.
Thing,
yes, right? President Trump said on Monday that the United States and Mexico have reached an accord to revise key portions of the North American Free Trade Agreement, and would finalize it within days, suggesting he was ready to jettison Canada from the Trilateral Trade Pact if the country did not get on board quickly. Speaking from the Oval Office, Mr. Trump promoted the preliminary agreement with Mexico as a deal that could replace NAFTA and threatened to hit Canada with auto tariffs if it did not, quote, negotiate fairly. They used to call it NAFTA, Mr. Trump said. We're going to call it the U.S.-Mexico Trade Agreement, adding that the term NAFTA, which he has called the worst trade deal in history, had a bad connotation for the United States. Yeah, well, Mr. Trump may try to change the name. The agreement reached with Mexico is simply a revised NAFTA with updates to provisions surrounding the digital economy, automobiles, agriculture, and labor unions, the core of the trade pact, which allows American companies to operate in Mexico and Canada without tariffs, remains intact.
One question.
Yes, sir.
Are they going to pay for the wall now?
No, that apparently not a part of the the
okay.
new
just
non-NAFTA.
Checking.
Yes. JP.
I thought that the policy of the deal, which is that cars that come into the United States without tariffs go from 40 to 45% of the car has to be created with people that make at least a $16 minimum wage. And then the actual parts that come in from Mexico going from 62.5% of the parts that are in the car to 75% of the parts in the car have to be made in the U.S. I think that the policy of this deal, if it goes through, would obviously be positive for the country. Whether he can get Canada to sign on, who knows? Whether they can actually get the deal on paper to get the Congress to ratify it and President Trump to sign it, that they're also a long way away from that.
There's some who are even questioning whether it's legal. Is it legally permissible without having Canada on board?
Well, if the Congress passes something and the president signs it, I would imagine that it's that it's legal. But Trump,
I think but going from a bilateral to from trilateral to bilateral,
right? It would need congressional. I think that it's an international treaty, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, and right now, I think Trump is going to try to bring the attention away from McCain, which he hates having attention away from him, especially on a guy that's so well thought of, and trying to bring attention back to the stock market being high and unemployment being low. And this is what he's focused on. I thought it was interesting that the president of Mexico got on the conference call with him yesterday. That was a weird optic, I would say, right? What you saw on television.
Well, them trying to get the call together was bad enough, but yes. Yeah, the whole thing was odd. Yes.
What would you do if you were the president of Mexico or the prime minister of Canada at this stage of the game? In other words, Trump the bully does have the upper hand.
You do what's in the best interest of your country. And if you just politely go along with a modified NAFTA that makes sense, that was really called for anyway, I mean, the digital rights aspect of it wasn't even factored in, and things were missing from the original NAFTA that needed to be put in, you know, let them call it something else and make a lot of hay about it. If you get something that's good for your country and good for your people, just let him have his little moment of sunshine while you walk away without paying for a wall, for one.
Well, yeah, you know, but I think both those guys really despise this man.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right.
And they're filling his hand to some degree. That's what I find fascinating about this. In other words, they're up against the wall. You know, if they look, especially Trudeau, you know, in Canada, that's why it's taking a while, you know, to get where he inevitably needs to go. And you're right, Mike, in your assessment of you know, that they could breathe a sigh of relief and say, well, you know what, this ain't so bad, so we may as well take it, even though we have to help the SOB.
Right, and Justin Trudeau, it would be foolish to hurt his country out of spite for Trump, who has turned him into this demon.
Well, but it's
demon.
It's not that easy.
Yeah, it isn't. Yeah.
The reason it's not that easy is not only does he dislike Trump, but his constituents don't like him. So if he turns around now and makes his deal, right, his constituents who may be for, you know, getting through this whole thing,
right?
They still don't like him.
Right. They may take it out on Trudeau because they'll feel like he caved in to Trump, even though what he might do would be in the best interest of all the countries. I mean, we have to get our act together with our neighbors, for crying out loud. I mean, they're our biggest supporters, and on the international level, especially Canada, they've been an ally for decades. And you know, we really got to get past this. And if somebody has to eat a little crow to, well, Trump isn't going to eat any crow.
That's the point.
Yeah. I mean, if you have to just sort of wink and say, oh, good, well, we have a new agreement, let's just go forward. In the long run, Trump will be gone, and Canada and the U.S. will be allies for decades to come. And that's probably the right way to look at it, except you hate to do anything that would bolster Trump back in the U.S. That's probably on their minds.
Well, Michelle checks in and says, voter canvassing in my town. I'm a devoted listener. I've been canvassing in my small town in the Catskills for local primaries and midterm. When approaching independents and unaffiliated, I've been impressed by the entrenched anger and body language that people take when we walk up to them. Trump is my man, and work till we drop is what I've heard. I assume that ears are glued to the constant stream of provocation by certain TV channels. So sad there's such upset and not any opening for dialogue. Keep on keeping on. That's a secret term that we on the liberal side use. Pete used a lot. Keep on keeping on. Dems are psyched to get out the vote. And that's Michelle.
All right. Well, that'll define the future, what happens in the midterms, right?
That's for sure.
Chris from Albany says, educated conservatives dislike being linked to Trump, most likely because they consider Trump gauche. But Trump is pursuing solidly conservative policies and choosing judges completely approved by conservatives, saying, quote, real conservatives shouldn't be linked to Trump is no true Scotsman fallacy. Thanks to all.
Well, so in other words, the conservatives may have disdain for Trump and some of the personal aspects of the way he does things, but they're ready to be quiet about it because they're getting that Supreme Court.
And a tax bill that is only helping them and all the rest of it, yeah.
Well, I don't know how, I mean, but even a real conservative should understand that putting $1.5 trillion debt on the backs of our children, our grandchildren, our great grandchildren, is
wrong. Can you imagine if Obama did it?
Well, yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of that if Obama did even a fraction of what Trump has been doing, that he would be run out of town.
I would also say that conservatives educated at Ivy League schools have a high level of detestation for Trump, or they hate Trump, people that are educated at Ivy League schools.
Yeah, but
they're also looking at their portfolio and saying, I hate the guy, but my portfolio is doing quite well.
Yeah. Okay, so Chris from Albany used that term, no true Scotsman fallacy. Does anybody understand that?
I don't know.
That would be your department, Alan. If anybody understood it, you would.
No.
And I just hope it wasn't an ethnic slur.
And Janice says, political term for Trump's GOP, reactionaries. I use that. I said that.
Well, right. I ultra right wing reactionaries. Yeah, those work.
I think in the future it might be called Trumpian. That might just be like a
sure.
I think that's becoming a philosophy.
Yeah, I think that's becoming part of the political verbiage. Sure.
Okay, so then Kathy says conservatives, a true conservative would want to conserve, in capital letters, resources, money, environment, education. Yes, religious values. Today's GOP does none of this. As you mentioned, the deficit also, destruction of environmental resources, destruction of public education, destruction of workers' rights, destruction of moral religious values. No, the GOP of today is the party of greed. You can add all sorts of words, but this is the root of all of their actions, and that's sad from Catherine. And by the way, Joe, we've been getting just a few letters every once in a while from people who say, I put my last name down, but please don't use my last name on the air, or please don't say what my position is. You know, it would be better if you don't want us to read the letter or read any part of it, then probably not write. You know what I mean? Okay, and so there's Jessica says, What are the new Republicans? I think the term you are looking for is isolationists. And Jill says, what a guy. It's possible I missed your conversation about it, but I heard that President Obama is giving a eulogy at Senator McCain's funeral. We did talk about it at the request of McCain and his family. If that's true, I think that's such an admirable thing for McCain to do, from defending Obama against that bigoted woman during the debate to asking him to deliver the eulogy. Now that's a stand-up guy, says Jill. And then our friend Julius says, any comments on Trump's claim that Google is suppressing anything from his base and not allowing left-base criticism? And only allowing left-base criticism.
So they're saying Google itself is filtering the search engine in a way that when you search about Trump, you just get the critiques that are negative about Trump and not the positive ones from the other side. Is that what the...
That's what the letter said.
I haven't heard that. Anyone hear that?
No, I have not.
I've heard the Trump criticism of that. I would think that Google, though, in terms of a business plan, would tailor their search results to what you, Mike Spain, might be interested, or I, J.P. Miller,
right, you're going to see something different than what I see and what Joe sees or Alan yes. sees because of our viewing habits, so to speak, online, and they'll recognize that, so they'll pitch different kinds of stories to each of us depending on our interests.
But I would also say that Silicon Valley is right now, especially Twitter and Reddit specifically, being fueled by a lot of right-wingers get on Twitter and get on Reddit, and they, they talk. And I think it's hard for Twitter and Reddit to see the type of content that's on their platforms and be profiting off it. I think that they're in a little bit of an interesting quandary where, of course, they want to make money, but they might be a little bit uncomfortable with how their companies are making that money.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, all here. We will go over to news with Ray Graff and more after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion on this Tuesday morning, the 28th of August, 8 minutes past 10 o'clock. Alan Chartok is here. Mike Spain and J.P. Miller, we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We have a couple, and then we're going to move on to other stuff.
Thank you, Joe. Robert or Bob writes about Lindsey Graham. I don't see how anybody can think well of Lindsey Graham after a shameful kowtowing to Russia. He has become another Putin toady, coming out for dropping sanctions and permitting oligarchs to enter the U.S. What's respectable about that? That's from Bob in Albany. And Mark says, Lindsey Graham. Senator Graham said this morning that Trump could only replace Sessions with someone who would keep the Mueller investigation going until its conclusion. Mark from Gil. So Sessions says he has to do that. And he doesn't do that? Then what happens? Nonsense. Bunch of nonsense. I think what you're seeing here is that Graham got a little bit of comeuppance for his earlier remarks about being able to fire Sessions. And so now he's covering his Yes, yes, yes.
Let me ask you a question. If the Attorney General truly was going off the rails and doing inappropriate things or wasn't acting...
You mean like Trump?
Well, let's say a president, not this president, but a president appointed an Attorney General, and then the Attorney General was doing a bad job.
Yeah, yeah.
Shouldn't the president be able to replace him?
Sure, but these are extenuating circumstances. This is a terrible time when you have a lying, conniving, terrible president. Who really should be brought up on impeachment charges, in my mind. And so that makes the whole situation different. You can't just conceptually say one size fits all, Michael.
Well, no, I'm just saying the legal authority to replace an attorney general lies with the president. In this particular case, it would be inappropriate because the president is under investigation by the Justice Department. But in a general sense, that's ordinarily a president should be able to fire people in his cabinet if they're not doing a good job.
And that he has certainly done.
And the person to protect that, you're saying, is Jeff Sessions. He's the best person.
What? Are you talking to Michael now?
Well,
you.
No, Alan.
No, I mean, in a general sense, he's what we got.
No, I agree. I think it's interesting that the people that are defending Jeff Sessions now.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm so confused.
Well, because he is what you might call a right winger, right?
Right.
And you think that it's important that he stays in the job.
I think it's important because I know what's going to happen. If he fires Sessions, it's to get at Rosenstein. And if he fires Rosenstein, it's to get at Mueller.
Right.
And we know what this is all about.
Yes.
And so does he, because that's what he said in this statement. That he made, which is we'll have to be somebody who says that the investigation should continue bourgeois.
And the problem really comes from the president's, I think, his grotesque misunderstanding of the Constitution and the way the government works. He acts as if the attorney general is his personal attorney, like his counsel, and he needs to have his back and defend him. When you appoint an attorney general, it's to uphold the Constitution and the laws of the land. And the two are contradictory.
I think it's probable that he didn't understand that when he appointed
him. Yes, I do. I think you're right. I think he just thought, I'm going to put Jeff Sessions there. He'll take care of me. He'll keep him off my back. And that'll be that.
100%.
Yeah. I happen to think Donald Trump, unlike you guys, first of all, I think he's a devilish person. But I also think that he's a brilliant person. I think he knows exactly what he's doing. He knows what a norm is and what a law is. And a law is that you can do whatever you want. And the norm is you shouldn't do it because of the things you guys have just said. And I think that's what this is all about. Remember, on The Apprentice, you're fired, you're fired, you're fired, you're fired. He did that all through his cabinet, right? Everybody left. Everybody was fired. He thought that that went to him, and his base is sticking with him like... ants on a glue pad.
Well, it's not like previous attorney generals haven't... another difficult metaphor. Anyway, it isn't like other presidents haven't appointed close confidants as attorney generals, and the attorney generals have acted to shield the presidents from maybe unfavorable considerations. I think that's happened before.
Does the word Mitchell come to mind?
Yeah, John Mitchell. How about Bobby Kennedy?
Well, yeah, that was an extraordinary case. Okay, so Russ from Greenfield says, Donald Trump prefers to, quote, negotiate with one party, a parenthesis opponent, versus multiple parties because it's easier for him to intimidate one at a time and declare victory, whether it is one or not. Russ, you and I are on the same page. That's exactly what he does. Okay, and then Richard says, grandstanding Don. I'm trying to figure out how they're going to keep Trump off Twitter during McCain's funeral. Ice cream, golf... Or some world-affecting...
Golf. It's got to be golf.
Or some world-affecting situation that will demand everyone's attention. Frightening, and that's Richard.
My mother was a big advocate of just the pot and the spoon, the wooden spoon.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would keep you busy for a little while.
Yeah. You will, right? Just sit them on the floor with some toys or some kitchen utensils and... It'll take care of itself.
Let him tape a Fox and Friends interview or something. Just put him out there.
Right.
Take him down for 2 hours. That's all.
Yeah. No, I think he'll He's not. I mean, just like yesterday we were talking, he won't be foolish enough to try to open his mouth during all that time. He'll just next week is another week, and he'll start fresh.
Next week is another week. That's right.
They'll probably be quiet till then.
Yeah, I mean, there's the Labor Day weekend coming up. Lots of good golf, lots of friends. You know, that'll be fine.
Let's talk about North Carolina. Here's what the federal court has thrown out North Carolina's congressional districts again. A panel of three federal judges again declared North Carolina's congressional district map to be unconstitutional, ruling on Monday that it was gerrymandered to unfairly favor Republican candidates. The decision, which may have significant implications for control of Congress after the midterm elections, is likely to be appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, which for the moment is evenly split on ideological lines without a ninth justice to tip the balance. Though North Carolina's voters tend to divide about evenly between the two parties, Republicans currently hold 10 of the state's 13 House seats. A redrawn district map may put more of the seats within the reach of Democrats.
So let's remember how this works. You take all the Democrats you can find, and you shove them into as few districts as you can possibly shoehorn them into. Then you take your Republicans, and you spread them all around to the other districts. This is as undemocratic and
Arguably unconstitutional, according to this district court.
Yeah.
But they did back in January. They ruled this, and the Supreme Court wouldn't take the case, and they sent it back for reconsideration. And now they came to the same conclusion.
Yeah. Well, you know, as Justice Felix Frankfurter said so well so many years ago, he didn't want to touch gerrymandering. He said that is a political issue, and we should stay out of the, quote, political thicket. They haven't budged off of that idea all along. Now there is some talk, I'm sorry, Mike, about John Roberts voting with the people who think that it's illegal to gerrymander. If you see a pig flying through the room, you let me know, will you please?
I don't know. John Roberts may be the swing vote. He may take the Kennedy role, you know.
You think so?
Stranger things have happened.
Do you happen to have a $5 bill with you anyway?
Yeah. I mean, North Carolina is a very interesting state. It has a lot of progressive people in it. It's done amazing things for education in the areas of science and medicine. And yet, you know, 30 miles away from, the Duke Medical Center, one of the finest hospitals in the country, you have Tobacco Row. You know, you have a lot of poverty, and you have a lot of people who are not benefiting from it. And it seems to be a state that's struggling with itself. You know, they've elected Democratic governors and Democratic members of Congress, and then they replaced them with Republicans and for a while. And they were the state that when Charlotte, the city of Charlotte, passed the progressive law that allowed transgender people to use any bathroom, public bathroom that they wanted, the state superseded and passed a law that said they couldn't do that. They're having a big to-do right now because down at the University of North Carolina, in spite of a federal ruling, they retained a Confederate soldier memorial, and now a bunch of people came in and tore it down last week, and they've been arrested. And even though having it was a violation, tearing it down is a violation, and it's just it's a state that's in turmoil.
Didn't they give us JT?
James Taylor?
Yeah.
Well, you know, he lived in Chapel Hill, but he also lived over in, Martha's Vineyard when he was growing up. He was back and forth. So, you know, it's a beautiful state, I have to say.
The gerrymandering thing is a very interesting issue because of this packing versus cracking. And you, Alan, as a political scientist, understand this. You say, well, North Carolina, it's not fair that 10 out of 13 members of Congress are Republican. You also look over into Connecticut. Which right next door to us, there are 5 out of 5 members of Congress that are Democratic members of Congress. And you might say, well, gee, maybe they deserve to have a Republican in the delegation, right? Well, why not?
Well, because it may well be that there are a lot of Democrats in Connecticut. But by the way, Mike, I know this argument. I've heard it for many, many years. It's called the 2 wrongs don't make a right.
Well, no, but yeah.
I've always said that the Democrats do the same thing,
okay.
And I don't like it. I think it's a corrupt thing that really undermines our democracy.
I agree with you. I also think, though, it is hard to draw congressional districts because you either say, okay, there are going to be a bunch of safe either Republican or Democrat seats and a bunch of competitive seats, or you say it's going to be representative of the state or the district.
Well, Mike doesn't agree with you.
Well, I think that the courts don't agree with you. You know, the courts say that it can – sure, it is a political process, the apportionment, you know, the reapportionment process. But it's not entirely – and when it is manipulated to unfairly disenfranchise half of the state by having so few representatives
– it's disgusting.
It's not just disgusting. It borders on unconstitutional.
Well, let's look at New York State. This is going to be interesting, JP. You got to get ready to put all those articles up there about what's about to happen. Because if the state Senate goes Democratic in New York, and you have a Democratic governor, bye-bye Republicans, and that ain't right either, I'll tell you right now. Now, what happened in New York was that a federal judge or a couple of federal judges came along and they said, we don't like this. And so what they did is they drew the congressional districts in New York, if I'm not wrong, I think they did. And therefore, we get some what we call in politics fair fights. We got some fair fights. We got a fair fight right now going on Delgado versus Faso. And it makes a big difference.
In that particular district, I think it's the 19th congressional district.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
It's my understanding that the Democrats and Republicans are about even, but it's the independents that are the majority, or not the majority, but a very large number, and they'll determine who gets elected.
It's a purple district.
So if you were drawing congressional districts, would you want states to have a relatively even number of Democrats and Republicans and a lot of fair fights?
I would want fair fights.
To be representative of the voters of the district. Like Texas should have more Republican members of Congress and California should have more Democratic members of Congress. You'd be okay with that?
No, don't put words in my mouth. I know that old trick of yours.
Stop playing that old trick, JP.
I know that old trick of yours. No, the answer is I want a democracy. And I want fair districts and fair fights where people can vote their conscience. And if you end up with more Democrats than Republicans, that's fine. By the way, if you take a look at the map of the United States, the political map, you're going to find an awful lot more Democrats than Republicans. So how is it that because the Republicans were really smart and grabbed a hold of all those state legislatures that came along and did that, including Texas, which threw everybody out on their ear, and they did it not in the time that they usually do it, but they got control of the legislature, and in they came and they threw everybody out, and some of the most outstanding Democrats in the United States Congress out on their ears. It was wrong. It was just wrong, I tell you.
Well, it's manipulation. Where does something that you're trying to make fair tip to become manipulation? It's all in the eye of the beholder. But
no,
I think
it's
the
not.
Court.
No, it's not.
Well, it can be. It can be close, and people will disagree. But
it's not in the eyes of the beholder. If the federal judges say, okay,
they're the beholders.
We're going to draw the map so that everybody has a fair fight. That's different. And by the way, judges are not without their political affiliations either.
No. The interesting thing is that the judges in North Carolina in this case have left open the possibility that they could have new maps in place by the November election. That's just impossible.
Well, didn't they do that in Pennsylvania, basically?
But it was a few months ago, and that was pretty difficult.
Alan, I do agree with you. North Carolina is a Republican-leaning state. Of 13 congressional districts, they should have 7 or 8 Republicans and 5 or 6 Democrats. I agree that that's the way it
should
be.
But are there no Republicans in Connecticut?
Good question.
Somebody's going to write us a letter and say, listen, I've been telling you guys for years that the electoral process is not – you know, I mean, if you really wanted to have a fair electoral process like you're suggesting, JP, you would say, okay, then the way we're going to do this is we're going to have transferable votes. First choice, second choice, third choice, or we're going to have what's called proportional representation.
Some do it, and it arguably gets you a better result.
Well, it depends on whether you want communists in the government, which is exactly what happened in New York City. When Vito Marcantonio, see, I'm so old, I remember all this stuff. And other people like that got elected, and that was the end of proportional representation.
Yeah.
We have about a minute to go, and so we don't really have too much time to get into another topic, although I would love just maybe a quick thought on Lanny Davis and what happened there. What happened to Lanny Davis?
Nobody knows.
Lanny Davis is the attorney for Michael Cohen. And he's backing off of some really wild claims that he made that Michael Cohen has proof that Trump himself, the president, was aware of prior to the meeting in the Trump Tower with the Russians, which would implicate him in collusion. And now he's been on TV pulling everything back and wondering what the motivation to say it in the first place was and what the motivation to withdraw it was.
Well done, Michael. Very well done.
And we do not know the answer to those questions.
He's a loon. We think so.
I think of no better way to end this segment than on those words. So my thanks to everybody, J.P. Miller, Mike Spain, Alan Chartok. Don't forget, we have the debate at 1 o'clock today, the Berkshire County District Attorney Democratic primary debate. It will be coming to you live from Fitzpatrick Main Stage in Stockbridge, Massachusetts.
Kay McGuire, proprietor.
That's right. And Alan will be along with, of course, with Josh Landes, Ian Pickus, and Jen Smith. So,
will you be selling tickets to Sunday's Ramblers performance?
At 7 o'clock, did you say? 413-528-1955?
Nicely done, Mike. Yes. Nicely done, Alan. Okay, we will be back right after this.